fate conspired to bring both Elman and Frelick to New Orleans.
Well, it's funny, but really what made us ditch town is we were there for the 89 Loma Prieta earthquake during the World Series. So it flattened Santa Cruz, and FEMA came in, and we got some FEMA money and took off. Went to New Orleans, man.
Ben was like, we got to go to New Orleans, and I was trying to get to... I remember I was going to Chicago. I said, we got to go to Chicago, check out what that is. But we kept going to these musical cities anyway. I remember we were in Memphis, I think, too. And these places just didn't really correspond to their legend or their mythology, you know. We drove into this city, and it was like... You can sort of tell pretty quickly that there is something going on here that wasn't going on in those places, because the city, like I said, it actually lives up to its legend, its perverse mythology and all that. The second night I was ever in New Orleans, we read about an open mic, and it was at the Howlin' Wolf, which at that time was in Fat City, and we went by. The first person I met in New Orleans was Phil DeGree. He'd be like the guest of honor there a lot of the time. And we were out back. I remember there were like huge roaches crawling around. It was hot, like I'd never experienced it. And it just rained really hard. We were sitting out there on the step, and Phil goes, "So you guys are from Santa Cruz." And paused rather meaningfully and said, "You're a long way from Santa Cruz now."
Guitarist and philosopher, Phil DeGree.
But oh, I remember what I said. I said, "Why'd you leave Santa Cruz?" Oh man, it gave me some excuse to get out of town. I didn't want to get too personal. It's like some people are on the run, you know. If you're here from California, you might be on the run.
Okay. We have a rather large repertoire that somehow we come out some nights, can't remember what the hell to play. I'm not sure how that works.
Frelick had some trouble getting into the music scene at first. After several months and a trip back to California, he returned to New Orleans. He started playing downtown with trumpeter Kermit Ruffins, who had started a band called The Jam Session. And he played uptown with Michael Ward's funk band Reward. He also started the jazz program at the University of New Orleans, where one ordinary morning, he met several musicians with whom he would change New Orleans music forever.
I was at UNO at that time, but I remember I was looking at a board and it said, "Yoga for musicians out on the field at 7 in the morning on such and such a day." And it was taught by a fellow named Ben Schenk. So I show up there, and this particular morning, very early in the morning for me, I mean, I think I'd probably been out. I used to go to 6-7 bars a night. You know, you remember those days. 5-6 in the morning, at least every morning. And I run into them, and all that's there is this guy Arthur Kassler and Ben. And we start trying to do this yoga, and Arthur's clearly, you can see a look on his face, he's hungover and lazy too. So Ben Schenk and Arthur were involved with this Kermit thing, and Ben Schenk had particular musical desires, musical things that he wanted to get out of the thing, but he was also into these klezmer tunes, and he's got a certain way that he wants to do them. And there were these couple of klezmer charts, and we would go to Caldy's and play these things and some other tunes. I mean, it's a gig.
Clarinetist Ben Schenk got this fledgling band their first gig at a coffee house in the French Quarter.
I remember riding in Jonathan's jalopy. He had this big, old Lincoln or something, or Cadillac, something like that, that he was driving around, you know, and it was like lopsided. And we were probably driving around and listening and just getting all excited and jumping around going, "Oh, we can do this, we can do this." So I started getting down and transcribing a lot of these tunes, making lead sheets, you know, figuring out what are the chords, and called ourselves Ben and the Boys. That's what we were, and we had a gig at Caldy's Coffee House.
We started playing with Ben and the Boys. We decided we learned one klezmer song, slipped it into this sort of New Orleans trad jazz wannabe set, and the klezmer stuff was just, it was on. It was the exciting song of the evening, you know, the song du jour, it happened. Well, we learned another song, and then another klezmer song, and then another klezmer song, and then Ben and the Boys sort of morphed into the New Orleans Klezmer All-Stars with Ben Schenk on the clarinet. Yeah, just morphed into the klezmer madness.
Grand Marshal and filmmaker Henry Griffin was present at those first klezmer gigs.
Yeah, it was Caldy's at Decatur and Governor Nichols. Basically a place you, you know, sit all day, kill some time, drink the iced coffee, and it tasted like melted ice cream. And they started in the middle of the afternoon. And While I don't have a vivid memory of the entire gig, I remember the first note. Because everybody looked up. Nobody was expecting to see klezmer music in New Orleans. First of all, they couldn't identify it as klezmer music. I don't know where you'd find that out in New Orleans unless you were Jewish. NPR. Nonetheless, they just decided to play this music to amuse themselves and at a secondary level to amuse everybody else. And that has actually remained the guiding ethic of that band ever since. I mean, even the name, the New Orleans Klezmer All-Stars, is an ironic name. They used to joke that they were the greatest klezmer musicians in the three-state area of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Arkansas.
There is not a history of klezmer music in New Orleans, according to Professor Bruce Rayburn of the Hogan Jazz Archive at Tulane University.
If we try to infer that there was a healthy klezmer tradition in New Orleans, that's a pretty shaky foundation. The approach I usually try to take is to talk about the way New Orleans culture operates, which is whatever your ethnic background and heritage is, when you land in New Orleans, you become a part of a vernacular, some would say creolized culture that builds things from the ground up. You are bringing that ethnic heritage into the mixture as raw material, but what you end up doing with it tells us a lot more about the way New Orleans vernacular culture works than it does about, say, trying to identify ethnic strains in jazz and then, you know, give a percentage to Jewish, give a percentage to African, give a percentage to Hispanic or Latino. And the presence of a Jewish population meant that there would be, say, Jewish liturgical music out of synagogues. In other words, there is a tradition of Jewish music making here. It's probably tied largely to religious observances. And if you look at early musicians' unions, you see lots of Jewish names active on the music scene. However, I've never encountered anything that would suggest that there was klezmer being performed, that there were, in fact, klezmer bands.
You have to mention that one of the klezmer's greatest gigs was at Lucky's. Lucky's is a bar on St. Charles Avenue. They played alternate Wednesdays. I'll always remember it was Wednesday because Wednesday was stir-fry night. You would bring them a vegetable and they would put it in the stir-fry and they would feed you with it, which was great for those of us who didn't make a lot of money. And so I'd show up with like a carrot, which costs about 5 cents, and then you'd eat. That's how down low it was. And I think Jonathan and Alex were living on Barrack Street.
Songwriter and guitarist Alex McMurray was Jonathan Frelick's housemate and has been his musical foil for a decade plus.
Nobody even heard the word klezmer before they started doing that. Arthur Kassler, Jonathan, Ben Schenk, they brought the whole thing here. And this is at the advent of the New York klezmer scene. It was going on for a couple of years, not too long. But they were checking out Mickey Katz and all this stuff, and nobody knew anything about it. They were just playing klezmer for fun, and they just turned into a klezmer band. They've been together over 15 years. What an achievement. Unbelievable. Klezmer band, they're going to play my wedding.
This is part of our anti-professionalism bit. Piss off the labels, piss off the other bands. You're lowering the standards for all of us. We'll never make it. Damn it, you're on the road. Behave.
Glenn Hartman has played keyboards and accordion for the New Orleans Klezmer All-Stars since the beginning.
He's an absolutely brilliant guitar player, really. In klezmer, I think he's, I mean, I can say things that are fact or not fact, but certainly one of the most innovative klezmer guitar players ever, you know, if not the most innovative. Hands down, no one is doing what he does. That's pretty special.
A saxophonist for both Galactic and the New Orleans Klezmer All-Stars, Ben Elman knows ecstatic music when he hears it.
Yeah, it's not klezmer music for your grandmother. That was always sort of one of our sayings. It's a wilder... it's also, I think, Jonathan, you know? I mean, he plays a raucous electric guitar in that band. That doesn't go down in a lot of klezmer bands, man, usually.